welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This week's episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, a full-service regulatory compliance consulting firm serving the ambulatory surgery industry, and Eden Group Development, publisher of the ASC Regulatory Compliance series of books by John Gailey.
Welcome to episode 11 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for March 12, 2018, recording from our studio here in Rochester, New York. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. I'm here with Jenna Alvarez, also a Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS, and John Gailey, one of the nation's leading ASC industry experts. He is the author of over 10 books about the ASC industry, one of the most sought-after speakers about ASC financial and regulatory issues, ASC developer and administrator, and now the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading ASC financial and regulatory oversight firms. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Good morning, Sue.
So, John, last week we talked about the USA Today article. It seems that the article has not really garnered any ongoing attention. Now, you wrote an article on LinkedIn, which has been extensively shared and commented on. Can you talk a little about the fallout?
Sure. So, first of all, since you mentioned it, please, all of our audience members, I'd like to have you look me up on LinkedIn. I'm under the name John Gailey, spelled G-O-E-H-L-E. That's G-O-E-H-L-E. Please look me up and connect with me. And if you do, you'll be able to see that I publish ongoing articles on LinkedIn and just periodic updates about what we're up to here at AHS. Last week, when the USA Today article was published, I wrote an article in LinkedIn entitled Responding to Misleading News Coverage of the Ambulatory Surgery Industry. And as you mentioned, Sue, it got a lot of comments and it was shared pretty extensively. And I've actually received some requests to talk about the subject more. And in fact, I'm doing an interview with Same Day Surgery about the topic, which will be in a future issue. Overall, I think we can rest a little bit easier now, knowing that the poor research and the poor writing pretty much seems to have sunk the article. But it is still out there. It still is going to show up on search results. And I just want to make sure that everyone is prepared to answer the concerns raised in the article with hard facts and to be sensitive to the patient's needs when they come in and have questions about this. So read the article on LinkedIn. Also, or you can listen to last week's podcast where we talk a little bit more about it, and I think you'll get a good flavor for, you know, how to respond to these things.
Thanks, John. In other ASC news this week, the Association of Perioperative Registered Nurses, AORN, announced that they have acquired both Outpatient Surgery Magazine and the OR Excellence Conference from Harem Publishing Partners. John, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it seems like AORN has decided to get into the publishing business by buying out, one of the more prominent ambulatory surgery magazines out there right now. Certainly Outpatient Surgery Magazine is very well known for thought-provoking and interesting articles that are, tend to be able to be, implemented immediately in the centers. I think it's a good move for AORN in general. I think that it gives them an instant public audience with the ASC market. And I think that it also demonstrates the growth of our industry and the importance that freestanding patient outpatient surgery is to the industry now, whereas AORN often has been considered largely an organization focused more on hospital, operating room nurses. Now we truly are showing the full breadth of the industry and of this organization.
And some very important news for our listeners. On March 9th, 2018, the FDA issued warning letters to the three duodenoscope manufacturers for failing to follow through with an ordered 2015 post-market surveillance study on cleaning and disinfecting the duodenoscopes, as well as sampling and culturing of scopes already in use. According to the FDA website, the manufacturers Olympus, Pentax, and Fujifilm have all failed to meet requirements. This action came as a result of the FDA discovering in 2013 that a link between duodenoscopes and multi-drug-resistant bacteria was occurring, despite users following proper cleaning, disinfecting, and sterilization instructions. The three manufacturers are expected to submit plans for studies by March 24th. The FDA expectation is that 100% of the studies will be completed by June 30th, 2018. Please see the FDA website for more information, links to warning letters and infection studies. And stay tuned for future podcasts on infection control. Also, due to these concerns, Pentax has issued a voluntary recall of all ED3490TK duodenoscopes. I am sure there will be more news to come. We'll keep you updated. So team, this development brings up a whole host of issues for ASCs, including, is your center following the manufacturer's recommendations? Is your center keeping track of these developments and are policies in place to keep up with the FDA announcements? And perhaps most importantly, is your center appropriately tracking postoperative complications? Jenna, let's start with you on the policy side.
Well, I think one of the most important things to look at is how your center responds to recalls and looking at the requirements from your accrediting body for guidance. For example, AAHC requirements for recalls is in Chapter 7, Subchapter 2D. They require a written policy and process to address recall of items, including drug and vaccines, blood and blood products, medical devices, equipment and supplies, as well as food products. This policy, they specifically state, requires that you identify sources of recall information, such as the FDA, and identify who in the organization is responsible for monitoring for these recalls. They also require to describe how applicable staff members are notified of the recalls and describe how the responsible individuals will identify if the product is present in the organization and determine if the product has been administered to patients or if it's equipment used on patients. And then they must show how the organization is going to document the response to the recall and include how the recall items were removed from inventory and disposed of or returned, and as well as if any patient notification is required. And the Joint Commission is a little bit less specific and states the organization responds to product notices and recalls. That's EC.02.01.01EP11. And then for medications, they specify that the organization has a written policy describing how it will retrieve and handle medications within the organization that are recalled or discontinued for safety reasons by the manufacturer or the FDA. So I think one of the important things is you want to go back and look at your policy and procedures and make sure that you are meeting all of these requirements for your policies.
John, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, interestingly, just this week, I signed an agreement with a facility that just went through a Joint Commission survey and had a number of citations in the area of sterile processing and has asked us to assist them in getting through those citations and to follow up on various issues, including competencies and documenting the endoscope reprocessing process. Unfortunately, it is a common story, and endoscope reprocessing is probably one of the hottest survey topics right now. So our organizations need to make sure that they have, as Jenna mentioned, you know, plenty of policies and procedures that address all these issues. I think competencies is the new hot topic, really, and competencies. We know about competencies in nursing, but also we need to have those competencies in the sterile processing, the endoscope reprocessing areas. And the people that administer those competencies need to be competent in the areas that they're monitoring. So the individual that is reviewing the employees here and filling out the competency forms need themselves to be well trained in that area. You know, we also need to make sure that we're doing regular follow-up on any reprocessing issues that happen, making sure that the equipment is always working well, that any minor problems are taken care of before they turn into anything major. You know, actually, Jenna and Sue, we've actually talked recently about some of the concerns we have about the tracking mechanisms that we have for many of our clients in infections and complication follow-up. And, you know, we know that our clients are doing a good job of communicating with the physicians after the procedure to determine, you know, to ask them if there are infections or complications. But that isn't always the most effective way for every type of a complication, or especially an infection, because sometimes the physicians themselves might not find out about that because the patient might go back to their primary care physician for that type of a follow-up. And my concern in listening to this article and after Sue's research, you know, very deep research, by the way, Sue, thank you, into this area, has been, do we all know that, you know, we're doing the best job possible to follow up or to determine if any of our patients have had any type of a negative impact from the procedure that was done that might have been caused by the duodenoscopes. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly. I think we're all struggling with the term. So be prepared that the surveyors are certainly going to be asking these questions. I'm certainly going to be asking these questions more and more. And failure to address the issue can result in immediate jeopardy. All of us at AHS are certainly ready to respond to immediate jeopardy situations on behalf of our clients. And, you know, we appreciate that we're the first company people call when they get into trouble. But it's certainly a lot more stressful for all of us to have to deal with it after the Joint Commission or HHHC or CMS or the state has been in. I think we all agree that it would be a lot easier to identify these issues calmly and work through them before a surveyor even shows up on the doorstep.
So let's take a short break and then talk about what every administrator and nurse manager must know. So, John, you promised your followers on both LinkedIn and our website that we would talk about the one thing each administrator and nurse manager must completely understand and refer to regularly to be successful in their job. As your newest employee, I'm also anxious to hear your thoughts.
Thanks, Sue. So actually, I'm going to start by asking you, how did we start teaching you about the ambulatory surgery industry?
Well, you mean after I learned that the job is 24/7 and I would probably end up dreaming about policies and procedures.
Yeah.
Then we talked about the CMS conditions for coverage as being central to our business and to the ASC industry.
So, yes, Sue, that is right. That is probably the most important thing to our organization. And I think we can all agree in our company here that, and perhaps many of our listeners out there, that we, after we read all of these conditions for coverage and the interpretive guidelines, we do indeed end up dreaming about them. So, listen, I was an administrator for, 17 years myself, working in an ambulatory surgery center. And I certainly understand that we need to always focus every day on providing the highest quality of care. That is indeed paramount to our organization. We can't lose focus on all the daily management responsibilities we have, such as scheduling and employee staffing issues, physician issues, all the environment, et cetera. But it still shocks me the number of administrators and nurse managers who have never heard of or understand that the conditions for coverage are the regulatory backbone of our industry. And many more haven't even looked at them regularly or don't know that there are interpretations or clarifications to the guidelines or to the conditions for coverage. So before I go any further, on our website this week at www.ASCcompliancepodcast.com, we will post all the reference to those resources so you don't have to worry about writing them down right now. I want you to focus on what we're talking about and how you can best keep on top of one of the most important things that you as a ASC administrator or nurse manager must focus on. So for the benefit of everyone that listens to our podcast, let's go through the regulatory framework. To be reimbursed by Medicare for ambulatory surgical procedures in our facilities, we need to follow the CMS conditions for coverage. These are what we refer to as the regulations, the Medicare regulations. Those are published in the Federal Register. They are available readily for free on the internet. You don't have to pay money in order to get access to them. They are updated on a periodic basis. The most massive change to the conditions for coverage occurred in 2008. And since that time, there have been regular changes to those conditions for coverage that you really need to stay on top of. So the conditions for coverage are the regulatory backbone. Beyond that is the interpretive guidelines. So the second level is what we refer to as the interpretive guidelines. This is published in Appendix L, Guidance for Surveyors, Ambulatory Surgical Centers, of the State Operation Manual. So this is part of the State Operations Manual published by CMS and made available to all the surveyors that survey for the CMS conditions for coverage in an ambulatory surgery setting. So this appendix is my Bible when I go out and do a deemed status survey for my accrediting organization. It provides the interpretations of all of those conditions for coverage out there. And it's very extensive. It's very, very detailed. And it really, even though that doesn't have the force of the regulation behind it, it becomes the de facto standard for all of those things that an ambulatory surgery center must do in order to assure that they meet all the conditions for coverage and the standards that apply. As I mentioned, these are the instructions indeed provided to the surveyors. It's like an open book test. So when the surveyors show up, you've already been given all the answers. You've been given the instructions on how to meet the conditions for coverage. The surveyors are just going to go through those items there and make sure that you're doing what they expect you to do. And then lastly, there are the clarifications, and these show up on the CMS website to provide interim guidance between publication of the interpretive guidelines. The interpretive guidelines are probably only updated every couple years. I think the last update was in 2015. So for example, in the fall, there were new fire and smoke door annual testing requirements for healthcare occupancies that were issued for all healthcare occupancies, not just ambulatory surgery centers. And a clarification was available on this topic. It has not been integrated into the interpretive guidelines yet, but it will be in the future. But it does show up in a clarification available on the CMS website. As I mentioned, we're going to provide links to all of this information that you can use right from our website. So as I mentioned in the beginning, or as the title of this section is, it is absolutely paramount that every administrator, every nurse manager completely understand the conditions for coverage, practically have them memorized, and certainly be able to know where to go to get the information about how to interpret those guidelines. I will also note that very frequently, shall we say, that physicians have questions about these regulations, and they like to have proof that indeed it is a regulation. So knowledge of and the ability to quickly get to the interpretive guidelines and the conditions for coverage will help you a lot when you're trying to explain to the physicians and other employees of the organization the regulatory reasoning behind the rules and regulations and the policies and procedures that we have. So the conditions for coverage and the interpretive guidelines are, of course, not the only regulations that we must follow. Beyond that, we have the state licensure regulations. So those would be the items that the particular state in which you live or work provides to the facilities in order to determine their eligibility for state licensure. And of course, if you choose to be accredited by an outside accrediting organization, or if your state requires that you are accredited, or if you choose a deemed status survey as a way of maintaining your Medicare eligibility, then you're going to have accreditation standards in addition to the regulatory and the interpretive guidelines that we've talked about before. Like I said earlier, it still shocks me the number of people that really don't look these things up regularly, that don't understand them, are not able to quote them. So please, if you're an administrator or nurse manager, and if you work in an ambulatory surgery center, please make sure that you stay on top of these things. That this is your road into administration if you're a nurse that dreams of becoming an administrator someday. And I'll also speak for other listeners of our podcast here, which are not always or not exclusively administrators and nurse managers, is that to understand the ASC industry, you really do need to understand the regulations that apply to us. The article in USA Today last week tried to imply that there really are very little in the way of regulations in the ambulatory surgery industry. Those of us that, of course, deal with it on a daily basis know that it's far from the truth. And it is these conditions for coverage and the interpretive guidelines that prove the regulatory restraints that we have in our industry and the level of quality that we have to maintain in order to continuously stay in compliance with all these areas.
Okay, thanks, John. Let's take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll discuss the past, present, and future of this podcast.
This is your co-host, Jenna Alvarez. I'm here with John Gailey, who, in addition to being our host, is also the author of many books about the ASC industry. John, can you talk about the books that everyone needs to have for their ASC library?
Certainly. Well, the two most popular books that I've written are the Survey Guide for ASCs, which is a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers. And the second book is Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. You know, particularly after that last segment where we talked about the centrality of the CMS conditions for coverage and the interpretive guidelines, I think the survey guide for ASCs, which I wrote many years ago and which is updated annually, provides the best resource, and it provides an easy way to read the conditions for coverage and see a cross-reference to the applicable interpretive guidelines and clarifications. Listen, we all know we live in a world where everything is on the internet right now, but I still like, and I think many of the people that buy my book really like having a hard book in front of them to be able to write notes in the margins of and to be able to put sticky notes in. One of my favorite clients a number of years ago, I came in and she had her book in front of her with all of these yellow sticky notes all over the place with all these notes on it. I could see that she clearly, she really spent a lot of time reading it. So the book also has special annotations throughout to further assist the reader in understanding the regulatory environment.
And where can our listeners get these books?
Well, you can buy them directly from the publisher at www.reg-books.com. That's www.regbooks.com. Or they are available on Amazon like everything else in this world.
Great. Can you tell us a little bit about why you started this podcast?
Well, quite frankly, Jenna, you are to blame. You might remember that you and I spent a lot of time in the car returning from our clients, and you forced me to listen to, shall we say, an awful lot of podcasts. Did you not?
Yeah, I need a little entertainment on the road.
So we have this rule when we're driving that he who is in front of the steering wheel controls the radio or the entertainment. And Jenna would introduce me to all these podcasts. I think your favorite ones are about...
The Stuff You Should Know.
That's right.
The Stuff You Missed in History Class.
That's right. And they're very interesting. But it dawned on me, I'm thinking to myself, how many people really want to listen to this? And... clearly, I mean, they're very entertaining, don't get me wrong, but we realize that there really is a very niche audience for each of these podcasts. They'd never make it on ABC, NBC, or CBS, right? So I realized that in the ambulatory surgery industry, we probably have a need for and a desire for timely news. And I did do a little bit of due diligence and search to see if anybody else out there was publishing a podcast about the ambulatory surgery industry. And what I found was very interesting, as you know, Jen, not only wasn't there anything about the ambulatory surgery industry, but there really wasn't anything about healthcare on a regular basis. For example, I think we both tried to listen to the Joint Commission podcast, right? Which mm-hmm. I think there were like two episodes of it, and then it was
gone. Well, they're 5-minute little tidbits, but not a really in-depth look at the industry.
That's right. So we toyed around with the idea just before the beginning of the year about what to do here. And then we decided, let's take the plunge and go in and start doing a weekly podcast. And of course, it has been a bit of a stretch. I mean, we often record these podcasts as we are today on the Saturday before it gets released on the Monday. And it does take time out of our day. We are enjoying it. Some of us perhaps more than others. I think Sue over there tends to spend an awful lot of time on that research there. And frankly, just trying to get her away from the computer long enough to be able to record her section seems to be an ongoing problem now. But what I found, and as I talked to other people about it, is that the podcasts really are a very convenient way to pick up information. You can listen to a podcast on your iPhone, on your Android device, on your iPad, on your computer. We have Alexa. Better say that quietly just so she doesn't hear me. But we do have that device in our house, and we can just simply go up to that device and tell her to play the podcast, or any podcast for that matter, and instantly we can be listening to it. So the convenience of a podcast compared to something like the webinars, I found to be particularly compelling here. And I've done a lot of webinars in my time. I really do not enjoy them. I certainly don't enjoy them as much as I'm enjoying doing these podcasts and sitting around the table with all of you here as we prepare these podcasts here. In order to do these webinars, you have to be in front of the computer, whereas a podcast can be listened to anywhere in the world. And I find most of us have a 15 to 30 minute commute every morning. So this podcast can be listened to, you know, simply one of those commutes each day or on your way home or between, you know, your commute in and commute out, you can listen to it. And I think we also thought, we've talked to some of our clients about using these podcasts as part of the educational program, you know, that you have for your employees so that you can keep them up to date with what's going on.
So, John, what were your goals when you started this podcast?
Well, first and foremost, it was trying to keep our listeners up to date. I always found it interesting. As an educator, we know the rule is that you know, we have to know our material far better than anybody else in order to teach it. So it really forces educators to be on top of their game and to understand their material. Same thing here is that it kind of forces us to make sure that we're always up to date on the information. And thank goodness for all the wonderful researchers we have behind the scenes. And as I mentioned earlier, particularly Sue, who does a lot of our news updates here, or news research. And that's a very important part. That's a very important thing for our listeners to keep up to date. And it's an easier way for us to do, to actually keep our clients up to date. We do know that a lot of the people listening, of course, are our own clients. And this is kind of our way of making sure that we give them the news in an up-to-date fashion. And we don't have to worry about sending out regular emails or finding out if they actually listened to it or read it. And then we also want to educate the ASC community on regulatory issues on a more frequent basis than getting together for the ASCA conference, for example. We don't have good conferences, and nor do we have the money, do our average administrator have the money to be able to do that. So this kind of shakes things up a bit. You know, the webinars have been the mainstay of online education in the ASC industry, and they're already becoming kind of old school now, as Jenna, you've pointed out to me. You know, I didn't even know what a podcast was until, you know, you really introduced me to them. And I started to realize what a powerful tool this podcast can be for our clients, for the industry. And podcasts are much more accessible. They can be part of, as I mentioned, they can be part of your morning or evening commute. You can listen to them at home. You can listen to them at work, whatever. The challenge with this podcast, as we all know, especially working here, is it's not as visual as a webinar. You don't have notes in front of you. And we recognize that, and we're trying to figure out ways to compensate for that. For example, make sure that information is available on the website. We might in the future start doing putting out outlines up there so that you can kind of remember all the things we talked about. But one of the compensations that we have for the lack of visual content here is that recognizing that many people might actually listen to the podcast several times to pick up on things they might not have caught before. Or they might realize that they can come back to a podcast later once they realize they have an issue or they need to follow up on that. So that's one of the things we're going to be doing in the future, is making sure that the website, ASCcompliancepodcast.com, provides the outlines and documents to help support the content.
So now this is our 11th episode, and we've been learning as we've been going along, some just by trial and error, for example, on the technical side, learning how to produce these podcasts. And you guys probably know none of us are professional broadcasters here. Sue and I are nurses, and John is a former administrator turned consultant. So obviously none of us want to become a professional broadcaster. We like doing what we do on a daily basis. But we have been getting some direct feedback from our listeners and from our clients. And we're also learning things about our audience as we go along. Sue, as our chief researcher on the podcast here, I know you've been studying our listeners. What have we learned so far?
So we know that we have listeners in four countries. Obviously, number one is USA. Number two is Canada. Number three is India. And we even have one listener in Germany.
Germany. I can't help but feel that probably these are our U.S. citizens that are traveling. But it is interesting, you know, India and Germany. I mean, we know there's a lot of outsourcing going on in India. Mm-hmm. And whether, you know, the audience in India is actually listening to us to learn more about what their clients are doing. I'm certainly hoping that's the case. But we also know that the rest of the world really does not have as much development in ASCs as the United States does. So maybe that's what's happening here. Maybe people are interested in the industry and heard about our podcast and are keeping an eye on us.
And our listeners come from at least 26 states, or at least have listened to us from 26 different states. The states with the largest population of listeners are New York, Georgia, California, Texas, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. As we would expect, most users are ASC administrators and nurse managers. We also have quite a number of vendors listening.
So I have a few thoughts about our vendors. First of all, I'm hoping that they're going to use this as a tool to understand the needs of their ASC customers. And indeed, I would encourage ASCs that are listening to this podcast to encourage their vendors to listen to the podcast to learn more about us. Over the years, I've worked with many vendors and, of course, been often disappointed with their lack of knowledge about the industry or specifically about the ambulatory surgery industry. And in fact, I've worked with some of the trade organizations for manufacturers and distributors to help their salespeople to know what it is that they need to know about the ASC industry in order to be able to sell to it. And my comment is always, you gotta, You've got to learn about what we do. You need to be on top of this information. You got to attend conferences so that you learn what an ASC does and what our needs are. One last note I'll make is that if you are a vendor, think about advertising with us. So send us an email at info@ASCcompliancepodcast.com or visit our website at www.ASCcompliancepodcast.com. We'd love to have some advertising to help defray the cost of maintaining this relatively expensive process that we're in here of maintaining this podcast. So definitely think about us.
Okay, John, we have exciting future planned here for the podcast. Can you give our listeners some insight into what you have planned for the future?
Absolutely. I'm very excited about what we're thinking of doing in the future and what our plans are. You might have already noticed that we're starting to move away from a standardized format. We're going to keep the weekly news update at the beginning, and we're always going to have some type of a focus for the week. But our last segment, which had been in the beginning here, a question every week, is going to vary depending upon the week, depending upon the context of the content during that week and the needs of our industry. What do we need to talk about? For example, when we get to the Ask a 2018 conference, we'll have a whole section on follow-up the annual conference. What I'm really excited about is we're going to begin offering premium podcasts. So a premium podcast is a podcast that you spend money for. Now, don't worry, the weekly podcasts are always going to be free. We're not going to change that at all. But we're going to offer premium podcasts that go into a lot more depth on certain subjects. The goal of the premium podcast is to provide material similar to what people are paying for now in webinars, but in a more convenient format and, of course, at a fraction of the cost of those webinars. Our first premium podcast will be on governance. It's going to be geared toward administrators, owners, and board members. And this podcast will discuss the various responsibilities of the governing body. Those of you who have heard me speak at national conferences have heard me speak on this particular topic. And of course, I have a book about it. So that will be quite a bit of the content there, just giving really very practical advice to all of those that are involved in governance on how to deal with the various regulatory issues that they confront. After that, we are going to have a premium podcast dedicated to preparing for a CMS survey with hints on how to be prepared, what the current pitfalls are, and how to respond to a survey. The podcast will be styled after one of those speeches that I give on a regular basis at the ASCA conferences.
Well, it sounds like there's exciting things coming in our future. That's it for this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and let your friends know about what we're doing here at ASC Compliance Podcast with John Galey.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute, legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For free consultation, contact John Galey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. Our other sponsor today is Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including The Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage, and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC podcast with John Galey, please email us at info@ASCpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ASCpodcast.com.